Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell. With me, as always, is professional film critic, Sean Patrick. Visit us at ihatecritics.net, everyonesacriticpodcast.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our handle is Critics Pod. Follow us there. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Alexa, all your podcatchers. Subscribe to the show, rate and review the show. It does help us with the algorithms. I don't know, like, you've listened to us on Alexa before, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a bitch for me. My son wanted to listen to it to go to bed, and I could not get the player. I mean, I did, but it took me, like, because our title is so damn long, and it's got movie podcast in it. Alexa kept going to other movie podcasts and other podcast names. Everyone's a critic. But it is there if you keep trying, so don't give up on us. We're also on YouTube. We're streaming live right now, usually Sunday mornings if you're bored and want to check us out. We don't have a set schedule. If we ever to where we do, I don't see that happening any. But if you guys follow us enough and spend enough money on Patreon, maybe. But it is live on YouTube if you want to follow us. But, and I mentioned Patreon, patreon.com/criticspod. Best way to help support the podcast. We have a bonus episode we're going to record right after this one. I know we've been talking about it for months, and we were going to record it for about a month. But now we finally have all our ducks in a row, and we're going to get it done.
I got another podcast for next month too that I excellent. Think is a great idea that I'll share with you soon.
Fun, and those are going to be exclusive to podcast or to Patreon. At least an early release. Some of these might be too good to sit on forever. But the video, if I can figure the video out, because I just live stream and I'm done. I'm going to try to record our I Spit on Your Grave podcast, the bonus episode, and see if I can get the video to Patreon. If I can figure that out without, you know, blowing up my computer, that'll have video as well. What else? TeePublic. ihatecritics.net. Up in the right hand corner, there's a link to TeePublic. You can get yourself merch like this shirt. There's pillows, magnets, mugs. I mean, this particular mug's not there, but a smaller version of it is. All of our merch. We have the Batman versus Jesus, the Cameron Diaz shoulder, Willem Dafoe's Uncomfortably Large, or was that what it is?
I think it was Curiously Large.
Curiously Large Penis. All those, Lord of the Fitbit, all of our fun shirts over at our TeePublic page. If you search Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast, you'll find it there. Or if you go to ihatecritics.net, you'll see a link as well. Also, be sure to check out Jeff Lasseter, Cousin Jeff. He has a bunch of art there. He's done a lot of our artwork. Here's one of his mugs right here, the Hereditary. He's quite talented, and his stuff's even better than ours. So be sure to check him out at TeePublic as well. Let's get going with our show, Brothers by Blood.
Brothers by Blood stars Thomas Schoenaerts and Joel Kinnaman as cousins, not brothers, but they're brothers of sorts. They're brothers by blood because they kill people, you see. They're gangsters. And this movie sucks. I hate it. This movie is yet another in the annals of gritty gangster movies, the Irish versus the Italians. And the thing about this that doesn't work is actually something that works about another movie I'm going to talk about later called Flinch, another kind of gritty movie about crime and gangs and such. The reason this one doesn't work is because of a terrible lead performance by Schoenaerts. He's awful in this movie. He's so bored. He looks like he wants to be anywhere other than he is. And granted, that does work within the context of the character. He's a guy who doesn't want to be a gangster. He doesn't want to be a hard guy. I think he just wants to work a job and just go on with his life and be a nobody. That's not exactly the most compelling character to watch. It's not exactly the most interesting character to want to follow through a movie. And he's just mopey. So the first thing you see of this guy on screen, the first thing he does is he's hanging out on a rooftop with his cousin and a friend of theirs played by Paul Schrader. He just kind of wanders off to the side of the building and jumps off and lands on this very curiously soft pile of dirt sitting next to the building. And he'll get up and walk away from that. And this is supposed to tie into an ending where that comes back around. But that's, again, it just sets this tone of this guy who's just gloomy, who's just sad and bored and uninterested in anything, even when he's going to end up killing people and being very good at killing people. Joel Kinnaman is far more interesting. He always is far more interesting than the movies he chooses to be in, because he's got a really great presence. He's a charismatic guy. He's got a unique look to him. He's kind of like a he kind of reminds me, he kind of has a Peter Lorre and energy to him, where he's this interesting side character actor, and he never takes those roles. People keep trying to push him into leading roles. I don't see him as much of a leading man. Not that he's not a handsome dude. I guess in some ways he is, but his wiry sort of energy is much more interesting as a character actor to me. But unfortunately, this character just kind of reins him in, and being under this gloomy thing that Schonertz is doing throughout the entire movie, just being so insanely bored, nobody can come out from underneath it. And Kinnaman's not the lead character. It's Schonertz. We're following him. On top of that, the movie is desperately repetitive. So every other scene is a rotation of these two variations. Schonertz walks into a place. Somebody tells him that his cousin, Michael, that they think is his brother, he's in trouble, man. He's going to get himself killed. Tell him to back off. And he goes, okay, I'll talk to him. I'll do something about it. Then he leaves the room. And then that scene repeats. And then it repeats. And then it repeats. And if it's not that scene, there's another scene where it's Michael, the cousin, Kinnaman's character, being an asshole to people, being a complete jackass to everyone around him, including Schonertz. And Schonertz telling him, stop being an asshole, man. This is a mistake. You're making a mistake, man. Don't do this. And then the scene ends, and then it repeats and repeats and repeats. The only thing that's worth watching in this is Ryan Phillippe, who plays flashbacks as Schonertz's dad. And he's like, he walks on screen and he's just wildly charismatic. And I think the thing is that Schonertz isn't in those scenes. I think the thing about that is the main reason those work is that it's him. It's a flashback to Schonertz as a child. So he's not in the scene. And thus Phillippe isn't locked under this black cloud that Schonertz carries with him everywhere in this movie. So yeah, this movie's terrible. I hate it, and it's one of my least favorite so far this young year.
Nice. I mean, it looks like a dime a dozen gangster movie, like, you know, no stylized violence, just kind of, I don't know, just repetitive is probably a great word for it. It looks like I've probably seen it before, or skipped a movie like it before. But yeah, I got nothing more to add, because I didn't see it. It looks terrible, and I'm not interested in it.
Good choice.
Before we do move on, there's a movie I haven't seen yet, but I'm going to get to it. It's a friend of mine is in it, named Jason Bryan. He's been a Patreon supporter in the past. He's always wearing he has our coffee mug. He's always promoting it on Instagram. So I got to mention the movie he's in, called The Last Champion. It's kind of like The Way Back without Ben Affleck. It's about wrestling. Not pro wrestling, but like amateur collegiate wrestling, and about a guy who has drug and alcohol problems and goes back to become the coach. I still haven't had a chance to see it. I want to see it. It's available on Amazon. It always pops up when I'm looking for the movies we're watching this week. But I at least want to mention it. At some point, I will watch it and talk about it on the show. But until then, I'll probably do this every week. So, but he's been a great supporter of our podcast, and I think you should go check out The Last Champion on Amazon or iTunes, wherever else you watch your movies. No Man's Land.
Yes, No Man's Land. This one stars a guy by the name of Jake Allen as Jackson Greer. He's a teenager who's had an opportunity to become a baseball star. So he lives in Texas, right on the border between Mexico and Texas, right on the Rio Grande. His family has a ranch there that they're about to lose. And he's such a good baseball player that he's been offered the opportunity to play in the New York Yankees system. And he's going to probably leave to go there in a couple of months. But for reasons that he's not great at articulating, he doesn't want to go. He repeatedly states that he wants to stay on this ranch that's failing, and his family may not even have in a year, but he wants to stay there and help and be on the farm or whatever. Fine. he's got an attitude problem, and that somebody tells him that he's going to be a baseball player. His dad keeps telling him, you're going to go to New York, you're going to be a baseball player, blah, blah, blah. He's got to go try and get himself involved in whatever the ranch business is. And in this case, the ranch business is that People crossing the border continuously cross through their ranch. And this time they've cut the fence and their cattle are loose. And now, obviously, Frank Grillo plays his dad, is not too happy about this. So he runs out there to confront them. That happens once, and then it happens again the next night as they're trying to get the cattle back, and they have this encounter with a group of people led by Jorge Jimenez, who plays a coyote who's trying to get out of the coyote business by taking his sons and his elderly mother across the border to start an entirely new life. This comes to a confrontation. Jackson's told to stay home. Naturally, he doesn't. He comes riding up at the last minute while this is all going on, and somebody in the group that's with the coyote pulls out a knife and stabs his dad in the shoulder. That happens. The coyote goes for Frank Grillo's gun, and the gun goes off and shoots his brother, played by Alex McNichol. And then as this is all going on, another kid who happens to be the coyote's youngest son goes to try and run away, and Jackson shoots him in the back as he's running away. This is all terrible, all tragic, and all of it within earshot of a Texas Ranger played by George Lopez. This leads to him very quickly figuring out what took place, even as Frank Grillo's character tries to lie and say that he did it. It's very clear that Jackson was the one who fired the shot, so he goes to arrest him, and Jackson decides to ride off across the border and heads into Mexico, where the story really takes place. He ends up falling in, working on a ranch of a rich Mexican guy, and has this epiphany about how their life is just like mine. This is very strange. I never would have guessed. All the while he's trying to get down to the hometown of this kid that he shot so he can return something to him and maybe even allow the dad to take revenge on him. The thing about it is that the center of this movie doesn't hold. Jake Allen doesn't look like a teenager who's on his way to New York. He looks like he's in his late 20s, early 30s. He's also very vacant. He doesn't have a very, strong impression. And that's why, when he has the revelation about Mexican people are just like me, it plays as not a revelation, but he's just not very bright. And that just continues to happen throughout. Everybody of Mexican heritage, aside from George Lopez in this movie, is basically this magical human being who's the kindest human being on the planet, who's willing to help out this white guy who they don't know has shot a child. and it all just plays out like that. This movie doesn't have the weight or the presence to carry this type of heavy material. And it really falls apart very quickly. It's not a poorly made movie, a poorly shot movie. It's just a movie that doesn't have a strong center to it. Without a strong central performance to carry what they're going for, which is a story of redemption and forgiveness, it's really just a lot of platitudes. And that's really just, it's not worth your time.
Yeah, it's not a very long movie. It's less than 2 hours, but it feels a lot longer than it is.
Yes, indeed.
I don't think it's bad. I part of it's, if I were to ever accidentally kill somebody, watch those shows where you just black out and you wake up and next to a dead body or even driving and something happened, I would,
right.
The guilt, I could relate to that in this character. I'd never be in a situation where I have to shoot someone from behind because, one, I don't have a gun, and two, I'm not a rancher. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I wouldn't be in that scenario. But, yeah. I can relate to what he's going through. However, I don't think that, and I say that having never been through the situation, I'd imagine in it, maybe there is a little bit more of a pain. I don't know. It's almost a little too perfect in some ways, which kind of takes away from the weight, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Like I said,
too tidy, too neat, too easy.
Too easy is a great word. There's like one bad guy who's not even a relevant character.
Yeah.
I can kind of appreciate what they were trying to go for, but like you kept saying, magical characters versus. I believe there's good in everybody and there's bad in everybody, and they show the good in everybody but one guy, and a little bit of the bad, but not quite enough to give it any depth. So it's just too neat, and it's fine. I mean, it's for a poorly paced movie, it's fairly watchable. It just feels like you're watching a 3.5 hour Coppola movie, and it's really an hour and 50 minutes or whatever it is.
I also have to point out that Andy McNichol is in this cast, and I did not mention her one time in my description. She's barely in this movie. Why they bothered to cast her is anybody's guess. She's criminally underused, and she's the best and most engaging actor in this entire movie. And it's really ill-advised to cast somebody who's that right. interesting opposite a character who's not that interesting.
Yeah, and even like in George Lopez, my wife's like, "Who is that? He looks so familiar." I'm like, "He looks like George Lopez, but it's not." It's not. She goes, "No, at the beginning it said George Lopez is in this," and I'm like, "God, he got old and fat." Which is what you do. I mean, that's not.
You didn't recognize him?
I recognized him. I just didn't know. I didn't realize he had gotten that old and big. I just thought it was a guy that looked like George Lopez.
I've always kind of thought he was kind of a big guy.
I know, but he just looked bigger. I mean, as soon as
I think it was the tight fitting uniform that really kind of accentuated it.
Yeah. I mean, there's.
And he's puffy in the face now, too.
Right.
We all are. I am.
But he's good. I mean, he's fine in it. Andy McDowell, is that who you were talking about? Or are you talking about.
I'm talking about Andy McDowell. Yeah.
Okay. You said Andy McNichol, so I was confused for a second.
Oh, did I? Oh.
Well, Alex McNichol is right above her name on the poster. But, yeah, she's the biggest star in it. George Lopez is probably the most popular person in it. And he's used fairly well, but she's definitely hardly in this movie. Could have easily been an extra. You wouldn't have needed even words to come out of her mouth based on what they did with her.
Save some money. Get a lesser-known actress for this.
I mean, this should be in... on the level of something like Hell or High Water, that type of movie, if you had the right direction, the right story, and the right depth, and it's just lacking all those things, it ends up just kind of being a movie. I think certain people will like it. I could see my dad being like, "Oh, it's a pretty good Western type movie," but it is what it is. It's
also politically kind of wishy washy too. It wants to be kind of liberal, especially at the end. But it doesn't really have any perspective.
You need more depth in order to truly have that perspective, come out. But yeah, that's No Man's Land. What about Flinch? I could not see this. It's in the theaters, I believe.
Oh, is it? Flinch is a film by director Cameron Van Hoy and stars mostly people you've never heard of. Daniel Zavato is the main star here as a hitman who is hired by an Italian mob family to carry out various different killings, one of which happens to be the killing of a city council member in Los Angeles played by Tom Segura, a killing that doesn't go in his usually very proficient fashion. He ends up having to kill him in a way that is very not the way he planned on it, not the easy way to get away with it. During this, the Tom Segura's assistant returns. Her name is Mia Rose in the movie, and she sees this. And the lead guy, Daniel Zavato's character, has to kidnap her, take her home, and keep her there to keep and try and figure out what to do with her. He doesn't have to take her home. He probably should just kill her, but he has this superstition that happened to him as a kid. His dad was also a killer, played by Stephen Bauer, as we see later on in the movie. And his dad one time took him out with him to kill a man. And as he was doing it, his father goes to kill this guy, and the guy didn't flinch. And it set something off in Stephen Bauer's head that said, this guy didn't flinch when I was about to kill him. It must mean he has something to live for. And that resonated with him. He didn't kill the guy. He sent him on his way and moved on with his life. And that made a deep impression on Daniel Zavato's character. So when he goes to kill Mia Rose and she doesn't flinch, he has that flashback and he has that kind of superstitious thought that his dad had. So he kidnaps her instead and takes her home. He lives with his mother, played by Kathy Moriarty, who's absolutely brilliant. He brings this woman inside the house and puts her in his room, and she immediately grabs a gun. She's like, "I'll take care of this for you. Just get out of the way. I'll go in there and do it." Like, she's awesome in this movie. She's so good, and they have amazing mother-son chemistry in this that's really, really gives this movie a different feel. He's a really interesting character, and they give him a lot of unique traits. And I like the way this movie plays out. It's got a very clever plot that is not predictable in the typical way that a movie like this would be. Because we've all seen hitman movies. We've all seen gang movies. This movie takes a lot of things that are familiar. And in my review, I called it upcycling, essentially taking things that existed before and just doing them in a different and slightly better way. And really making something new out of something old. And that's kind of what Flinch does. It makes something new out of a lot of things that are very old and well-known. And that makes this movie very interesting and exciting. Daniel Zapato gives a really good performance. The woman who plays Mia Rose is very good as well. The direction is solid by Cameron Vanhoy, who's an actor by trade, who directing his very first feature, does a terrific job. The movie's got a unique look as well, where, you know, a movie like Brothers by Blood, which is dealing with a lot of the same things, is very dark and muddy and hard to watch at times. This movie mixes in colors in a unique way, as you can see from the poster. Yeah. Even the movie looks a lot like this in many ways. And there's this just lovely shot of a neon pink cross in his bedroom, which is just such a weird thing, but also just kind of eye-catching, and it really illuminates the room in a unique way. And the whole thing is very interesting in the way it plays out. And there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of unique complications too. And the gangster characters are very typically Italian mob gangster stereotypes, but they're very minimal to the story because it's mostly about him, and they're kind of there to provide a little bit of background color and something that he's working against at times. And I really like this movie.
Yeah, it looks phenomenal. I saw the trailer. It looks really good. I was hoping it was available, but that's cool. I mean, and like you said, the poster itself, if you put that and Brothers by Blood up next to each other, one looks like a dime a dozen. This one looks right. Like, I mean, it looks, it stands out. It's, yes. It looks, you know, like an auto, like a writer director type, like an auteur type movie. I don't know, it just sticks out on several different levels. It looks like it's got a cool style. It definitely would, if they were next to each other, I'd pick this one. Shit, if all three of these were next to each other, I'd pick this one.
You know, this is a good lesson for directors. This is how you use your Kathy Moriarty. So many directors have not known how to use her. This is so how you use her. She's amazing in this movie.
Yeah. Not since Scorsese's anybody used her right.
Pretty much.
Okay. Our Friend, apparently from 2019.
Apparently. Our Friend stars Jason Segel, Dakota Johnson, and Casey Affleck, and is the story, it's a story based off of a real-life story that was written for Esquire magazine called Our Friend, Love is Not a Big Enough Word. And that was turned into a best-selling book called The Friend by Lewis Teague. Casey Affleck plays the Lewis Teague character here, a newspaper magazine writer who is married to Dakota Johnson, who befriends Jason Segel as they're working together. And then he becomes kind of part of their life. They all become friends eventually after Casey Affleck sort of suspects that Jason Segel's kind of just another guy hitting on his wife. They come to be really close friends. And then they find out that Dakota Johnson has cancer and she's going to die. Her character's Nicole. And at first they're hopeful that she might survive. And at times it seems like she might. But eventually this is going to turn into an ongoing tragedy. And what happens is that Casey Affleck, they have two kids, obviously, Dakota Johnson and Casey Affleck do. And Casey Affleck is dedicating all his time to trying to keep her, you know, healthy and alive. And he's losing track of things at home and it's becoming very difficult. And so Dane, played by Jason Segel, gives up everything that he's doing, his job, his girlfriend, his place of where he's living, to move into their house and take care of them and take care of Casey Affleck especially. And the selflessness of that and the beauty of that is just so well captured. Jason Segel is so great at being a guy who would be that friend, who would be that person who would, you know, move into your life and move mountains on your behalf. He just has that energy and that life to him. And he's such a happy character too. He manages to keep this movie from being unbearably sad, which it very well could be. On top of that, so does the choice to make this non-sequential. The order in which they place the scenes, jumping back and forth in time, is a clever way to give them an opportunity to go back and show these characters just being funny and charming and getting to know each other and being friends. And then you're bounced back to, you know, the other aspects of this. And that is a really smart choice, because it makes the movie this movie could be oppressively sad if you just went in one direction with it. And that one direction in the end is very powerful. This is one of the more honest and real movies when it comes to somebody dying of cancer. This is not, as I've called them in the past, a dead ingenue movie. This isn't pretty cancer. She's miserable. She's horrifying herself and her family. And it's very, very difficult. And Dakota Johnson is incredible at capturing that. You definitely know that she did her research. She's amazing in this. But the whole cast is. Casey Affleck, say what you will about him, he's one of the best actors working. Has been for over a decade now. He's just that good. And like I said, Jason Segel, not known as a dramatic actor, this isn't an entirely dramatic performance. It uses his best qualities, best friend quality that he always brings to everything that he does. You want this guy to be your friend. It's, you know, I love you, man, is based off of that quality in a very comedic fashion. How I Met Your Mother is based off of that quality. And here they use that quality so well. And then when he has his moments where he's not himself, those scenes work as well. And everything about this movie, I just love this movie. I adore everything that they did for this. And it's lovely.
Yeah, when you go back to the sadness, it's, if you had done it in order, it's just a sad movie, especially if Jason Segel's not the one cast. But by doing it the way they did it, the scenes that are sad are so sad that they're so much more impactful because of the way they did it. It's not just building up to sadness. It hits you in the gut, and then it moves back to something light, and then so it makes the impact that much. I mean, it's sad. You're gonna cry even if you don't want to. And it's not stuff you would think. It's more of, you know, having to tell your kids versus her actually dying. Mm. You know, it's stuff like that. And there's four or five scenes in there that are just heartbreaking. And to me, it's shocking that it's been around for a year and a half or 2 years or whatever it's been around for. I don't know if that's a fact or if Google and IMDb just have it wrong. But you have three actors who are just perfect for these roles. And, you know, I don't know what else to say. I mean, Dakota John, in a lot of ways, I could see all of these being nominated in a different year or maybe even this year. I don't know what's going to happen. It's just weird that it's a January movie.
Yeah.
But this is... in a lot of ways, it's a must see. It was $20, and I was happy. I mean, I'm happy I spent it. I'm glad I got to see this one. My wife loved it. I just, I don't know. I'm so confused by the fact that it came out in 2019. That is
weird. Yeah, and I know it probably has something to do with what people say about Casey Affleck. I've not looked into it. I've heard terrible things, and I don't know, but. He's an incredible actor on top, you know, just whatever wrong with him. He's incredible at acting.
Yeah. I mean, from what I understand, he's now sober, and he's a lot of what he got in trouble for was related to him being an incredible actor. but again, I wasn't there. You hate seeing, you don't want anybody to, not him, but his victims, whatever the hell happened. I don't know. But I do love this movie, and I thought this is the best thing I've ever. I mean, Dakota Johnson's always been pretty good, but and Segel, both of them, I feel like this is their best performances, and I'm so shocked that I'm seeing this movie now and not like last November, December, or this coming November, December. It seems like that type of movie, like it's that good.
Yeah, it is.
Anything else on Our Friend before we move on?
No. I would recommend that the Esquire article by Lewis Teague is really, really powerful as well. And a really interesting read. Like I it's super long, but you don't even realize it.
Right. And I don't even know how long this movie was to be like, this could have been a long, this could have been 3 hours. I don't know. It flew by. It was such a, I was committed the entire time. Unlike No Man's Land, which wasn't long, but felt long as hell. let's move on to our classic. I'll hit the button.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized undisputed classic.
Love story.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
Another movie where I get to hear a famous line and know where it came from. 2 weeks in a row.
What the hell? What the hell does that mean?
This movie like, suffers I think... from our friend being the same week. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. You're right. That phrase has become like iconic. It's a, and yet when you watch it, and then in the context of the movie, I know what they're going for.
Right.
Like I know what they intend it to mean, but it's lazy in that way that, that they're not thinking through the entire implication of that because, you know, yes, in the context of the movie, she doesn't have to apologize for dying. That's the context they're kind of going for here. And really the context is more like, I can be as much of an asshole as I want because I love you. Like, that's another context you can use this in. Yeah, but I love you. But oh. You're an asshole. You should apologize. No. I love you. It's fine.
I mean, that really is 3/4 of this movie, too, is just them being dicks to each other, but in a fun way, I guess. And
then, yeah, then she dies. It appears fun for them. Like, it right. appears like that's really fun for them to be. I mean, there's a scene where he calls her a bitch, and she does seem like she's kind of like caught by it. Like, there's a scene on a boat where and it's part of their banter, supposedly, but she's just kind of, she seemed like it actually hit her that time. It's like, he's called her a bitch a couple times in this movie.
Hey, love like, means I don't got to apologize. I can do that.
Like, these are two people who are just repeatedly verbally abusive to each other through the entire movie, and that's supposed to be the charming character trait, which it kind of is. I mean, as she delivers those lines and kind of as he delivers those lines, it also suffers from knowing so much about Ryan O'Neill's real life. Him being an asshole to people resonates a little too true.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't even really a movie. It's just... I mean, really, maybe in 1970 it works, but it's not even a love story. It's them just existing, falling in love, I guess, really from the get-go, and then she dies. You know, there's no, like, arc or, I mean, there's a little bit with his family, but even that, it just kind of just scoots right by all that really quick and then gets to her death, and then the movie's over. So it kind of lacks of a story.
Was that a reconciliation with his dad at the end when he said Ryan O'Neill turns to his dad and says, love means never having to say you're sorry. And then he walks away like a mic drop. It's like, what does that mean in the context of your relationship with him?
And that's literally the thought going in his dad's head.
I wasn't there for that earlier scene. I don't know the context of this.
I mean, basically, that was his way of saying, I love you to his dad.
But, I guess.
But that's, I don't know.
But I'm not sorry that I'm walking away right now.
Right.
On top of it, as they deliver it, it's awkward. Like when you say it yourself, it's kind of awkward. You know, just trying to say the line. Love means never having to say you're sorry. Feels like it's awkward to say it that way.
Yeah. I did not know. I knew about this movie that it existed. I knew nothing. I didn't realize she died at the end. I kind of figured it out because I started this movie and watched it in pieces on HBO Max, then watched Our Friend and then finished this movie. So I kind of knew where it was going since you recommended this with Our Friend. But it just at no point am I emotional over it. Am I
right?
I'm just watching, you know. And it's because of the banter. It does have a nice little cadence that makes it watchable. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad movie. I just it's not. I think maybe in 1970 it's more powerful. Definitely in a week where you're not watching Our Friend, it's a better movie. But today, it just doesn't hold up probably like it did when it came out.
Yeah, Ebert loved this movie. Right. Gave it a 4 stars.
I mean, people didn't kill off characters like that often, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It suffers from being an outdated movie and not being able to hold up.
She also, you know, she uses the originator of the dead ingenue movie. She dies of pretty cancer.
Yeah, that they do not capture the cancer well at all. It just kind of out of nowhere. I mean, there's no build up. I mean, it literally just scoots by everything, and you get a nice, tight, quick movie, I guess. But it's mm-hmm. You're not going to be crying at the end.
No, it's sad, but it's like, okay, I'm sorry, buddy. You know, it's like you feel the sympathy you feel for a stranger who suffered a tragedy.
I kept thinking the whole time, thank God they didn't cast him as Rocky, because he was one of the guys up for it.
And then he made the main event. Wow.
Yeah.
There's another thing about this movie that it's set in 1970. It happens in 1970. This movie was made in 1969. There is no mention of, and they're college students, by the way. He's at Harvard. She's at Radford. And there is not a single mention of the hippies or the love, summer of love. None of that gets mentioned at all, which maybe at Harvard that makes sense. I don't know. I don't know much about Harvard in the 60s and 70s, but there's not mentioned it at all. Like, it doesn't place itself in that time at all. And Vietnam gets one mention, one kind of sort of sideways mention. And it's bizarre and it makes no sense, because her way of telling her husband that she's dying is that she's saying, I want the troops to come home. What does that mean? I want the troops to come home. What does that mean? I don't know. But then she comes back to it when she's just as she dies. She says the troops are coming home. And it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. And especially if they're coming from two different worlds, you definitely could have used her in that hippie world and him in that, you know, preppy world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's such a surface level movie. It's a surface level love story. I mean, you never get, there's no depth anywhere in this movie. And, but it, again, it's watchable. It flies by, even though it took me like 4 times. But again, I'm watching it at night. I don't want to fall asleep. So I would turn it off, watch it for 15 minutes, and then move on. But,
and just to get another horrible Ryan O'Neal reference in, when he called his wife a bitch, I immediately thought poor Tatum O'Neal being like 10 years old and hearing that. I can just imagine him doing it so bad. It just made me like, oh, it just made me cringe just thinking about it.
How does Alec Baldwin survive all these references? I mean, is it just because maybe he's a better actor. Maybe he just makes too much content that we can't. Maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, love story. It's out there. It's right. If you have HBO, you can watch it.
I know a lot of people who really love this. A lot of people really love this. And it's not that I don't see kind of what they love, because it is unique. In just in terms of its rhythm and its pacing and its scripting. In both of them as actors, you know, they do kind of pop off the screen, you know, more than your typical, you know, like, you know, if you made this movie today, like the kind of losers they would put in this movie. I mean, this is basically like After a couple of years ago, or Midnight Sun, like those right. movies they're today's love story and they suck. And this movie doesn't suck in the same way.
No,
because these are much better actors.
Yeah. In 1970, I'm sure this was great. And I know the people that tend to like it tend to be from that era. But it is what it is. Too Much Sun, the only movie that came out in 1991 this week.
Man, this is a weird movie. This is really weird.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of drugs involved.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, so the premise here is that an elderly man with two kids is about to die, and the church is trying to steal his money by changing his will. The church just wants him to change his will and leave them $200 million, and this priest is having him do this because his two kids are both gay. Eric Idle is a gay man, and I can't remember. Judy, what is her name? I can't remember her name now, but she's a lesbian, and they're both in very obviously gay relationships. And Eric Idle is playing a very mincing gay stereotype. He's essentially in gay face. so is his partner. Well, the other characters, the lesbian characters, are kind of at least kind of unique, not to a very particular stereotype. But because they're gay, the Catholic Church wants the old man to cut them out of his will. And he says he'll do that unless they are able to produce a child. Produce a child in the classic sense of actual sex. And so Eric Idle sets about trying to have sex with women and failing. And meanwhile, the other character, the lesbian character, she believes that she has a son from when she was a teenager. That son might either be Ralph Macchio or Robert Downey Jr., who are two kind of con artists who are kind of on the other side of the story, completely unrelated to these people, but somehow through the contrivance of this plot, they're brought together with them eventually. this is a weird movie, and I don't think it's a good movie by any stretch, but it's different. It certainly has a different energy. Robert Downey Jr. is definitely not all together in this movie. He is all over the place. He is bouncing off the walls in this movie, and sadly, I think we all know why. And the movie was directed by his dad,
who was probably bouncing off the walls himself. Ralph Macchio looks good in it. Is he good or not? I mean, from the trailer, he looks like the thing that pops.
No, okay. No, he's terrible. Darn. He's really bad, and you're kind of like, oh man, that's the Karate Kid. Things did not go well for him. I've never heard about if he has a drug history, but I can imagine based off of this performance, because he does not look well. He doesn't look well in this movie. No one does, really. Everybody kind of looks like they're a little bit out of it.
Right after we ended last week, you were excited to see this because it looks so offensive. It's starting to sound like it's not as offensive as you were hoping. Like, it's still offensive. Clearly, you have people in gay face, but
right. I thought it was going to be looking at Eric Idle in this picture. Like, he looks like he's playing a Mexican character from the just from the poster.
Yeah,
he looks like that. And I thought, oh gosh, they're not going to have him be of Spanish heritage, are they? Oh god, don't do this. And thankfully, that's not the case. He just has a really terrible tan. yeah, he's a. It's a trip. He's definitely, you know, like a very mincing '90s gay stereotype for sure. And again, his the gay characters are the heroes of the story. And this is a satire of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is the villains. They're the ones who are trying to cut two, you know, LGBT people out of their father's will because they're gay, and also because they want to steal the money. And so they're portrayed as the heroic characters, but there's no real hero character per se, because these are such outsized broad caricatures that are going on in the place of actual characters.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I did not watch it. I feel good about that decision. but at the same time, I mean, you got Robert Downey Jr., you got Eric Idle, who was a comedy legend, and you got Ralph Macchio, who at least sticks out. I mean, a few movies I've seen him in, I've always liked him, but it's been few and far between. You know, it's like you're talking like Cobra Kai, the Karate Kid movies, My Cousin Vinny, and what, Crossroads? And that's kind of shitty.
Outsiders?
I've never actually watched that, but okay, Outsiders too. So I'm sure he's got a bunch of shit out there that I've never seen, but I'd never heard of this movie. Part of me wanted to give it a chance, but then part of me, I had already spent close to $30 this week on movies, so I was good.
yeah, I get it.
No, I mean, that's not even, I'm glad the $20 was very well spent. The $7 was okay on No Man's Land, but our friend makes up for anything. you know, that's going to buy me some time over the next couple weeks of a good purchase. Anything else on Too Much Sun?
It's weird. I'll give them that. It's weird. And I'm surprised it's so forgotten, I guess. I think it is desperately forgotten. Like, nobody remembers this movie, which is interesting, you know, because Robert Downey Jr. has become such a huge star. You'd think anything he does would become memorable, and this is not remembered at all.
Yeah. Well, I never even knew about it, so.
Yeah. This is the first, putting together the 91 list that I put together, this is the first time I've ever heard of this movie, ever.
All right. Next week, we've got Below Zero and The Dig, both on Netflix, if we watch them. The Little Things on HBO Max. Finding Ohana, is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
And then Balloon Man. Those are all new movies. I don't know if they're all available. I don't know about Finding Ohana and Balloon Man, but maybe I'll, if hopefully they are. If not,
Finding Ohana is Netflix, so that should be fine.
Oh, perfect. So you have three Netflix movies and an HBO movie and then Balloon Man. 1991, Meet the Applegates, Queen's Logic, and Run.
Dude, I'm recording a show here. Why? My son literally walked. I mean, it's not going to be on the audio part as much because I have it hooked up differently,
but YouTube just got a toilet flush. When I'm recording, you got to be quiet if you're going to walk up here.
Oh, that's great.
We don't have a classic yet, but we will get one soon. Otherwise, patreon.com/criticspod. Best way to help support the podcast. There will be an Ice Fit on Your Grave. My son will be on to talk about it, too. not true. He did not watch it with me. He did see Death Proof, though. hey, again, you can't. They can't hear you on the podcast. Only the YouTube people can, so shut up. when Death Proof was over, he goes, "This is kind of glitchy. It's like Uncle Joe's movie." Because of all the grindhouse effects that they added to it.
Oh, nice.
And that Santa Claus was killed at the end. Anyway, patreon.com/criticspod. There will be an Ice Spit on Your Grave episode coming your way soon for all the Patreon supporters. Also, tpublic@ihatecritics.net. Up in the right-hand corner is the tpublic page. And then be sure to check out Jason Bryant's, the movie he's in. He's a Hall of Fame wrestling announcer. I mean, he's been to the Olympics. I mean, he's a big deal in the amateur wrestling world. He plays an announcer. He plays himself, I think. Check out his movie, The Last Champion, on Amazon. In the meantime, let's run through some flick chart. Let's see if I can get the screen share up here. All right. Vicky Cristina Barcelona, While You Were Sleeping.
Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
It's a movie I want to live. Honey, I Blew Up the Kids, Superbad.
Superbad.
Definitely. First Blood, The Innkeepers.
I don't know what The Innkeepers is.
First Blood, Iron Man.
Iron Man.
Yeah, as much as I love First Blood, Iron Man's so freaking watchable. Meet the Parents, Rocky IV.
Oh, I don't know where to go on this one.
I'm biased, but I get why you would go either way. Rocky IV, I'd watch first. It's more fun for
you. Gotta go Rocky IV. I can live with that.
But I
it's cheesy, but it's fun.
Right. It's like the perfect level. It doesn't quite know it. But it kind of does. Annie Hall, Superbad.
I mean, I would watch Superbad first if I'm being completely honest, but I know Annie Hall's a better movie.
Right. I just relate so much to Superbad.
Right?
That's my... It's more of the age we are, I think.
Yeah.
We can flip for it if you want. I mean, it's
I agree with you.
Annie Hall is better. I mean, it literally defined it. One, it defined the romantic comedy, and then people just kept trying to recreate it for years. A League of Their Own, Hellraiser.
League of Their Own.
That's a horror movie I do not get.
Yeah.
Master and Commander. I don't know why this didn't come up last week. Austin Powers and Goldmember.
Master and Commander.
Yeah, part of me wants to pick the other one just so Russell Crowe reaches out to the podcast and corrects us. The Exorcist 3 Ghost.
Exorcist 3.
Agreed completely. The Virgin Suicides, Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy, though. Virgin Suicides is brilliant.
Agreed. Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo, The Doors.
The Doors. Somebody give me some bleach for my eyes from that poster.
Saw 4, Witness.
Like I said, I always take those Saw movies as one, but I'm still going to pick Saw 4. What the hell?
I'll go with you, although I take Saw 1 through 3, and then 4 on, I'm out. Alien, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
It's Roger Rabbit for me.
I'm with you. Josh really ruined those Alien movies for me by making me watch them. loved them. And then it was just like, oh my God, these are not what I thought they were. I remember them being Sling Blade Quills.
Sling Blade.
Okay. The Day the Earth Stood Still, Beverly Hills Cop.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Agreed. Pretty in Pink, Meet the Parents.
Pretty in Pink.
I don't like Pretty in Pink. I don't like him that much. Oh my God, I just threw the quarter of my coffee cup. But Pretty in Pink wins. Yeah, you got E.T. Great. Coraline, Lincoln.
Coraline. I'd rather watch that.
I still haven't seen Lincoln. Spectre, Miracle.
Flip a coin. I don't care about either one.
I'd go Miracle. It wins. I only win when you don't play. Ant-Man and the Wasp, The Game.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
It's the only Fincher movie I just could say pissed me off a little bit. Rambo 3, Get Shorty.
Get Shorty.
Agreed. Captain America, The First Avenger, Pay It Forward.
Oh, yeah, Captain America, by a lot.
Make sure I don't accidentally click Pay It Forward. My Cousin Vinny, Ghost Rider.
My Cousin Vinny.
Agreed. Birdman, Across the Universe.
Birdman.
Yep. Final Destination 3, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Indiana Jones.
Agreed.
Not that I was thinking about that too much.
The Wrestler, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
The Wrestler.
That's Indiana Jones you hated, if I remember right.
Yep, that is correct.
Singing in the Rain, Falling Down.
Singing in the Rain.
Falling Down, I'm afraid to revisit. Road Trip, Big Hero 6.
Big Hero 6.
Agreed. Atlantis, The Lost Emperor, The Polar Express.
Oh, I do not care.
Polar Express, just to keep it moving.
Good.
Of course, then the internet decided. You're going to think about that a little more. American Wedding, Mission Impossible 3.
Mission Impossible 3.
Little Shop of Horrors, Alexander.
Ugh, I don't care.
I'm not picking either one. Road to Perdition, The Simpsons Movie.
The Simpsons.
Agreed. Gangs of New York, Dirty Harry.
Gangs of New York.
Yeah. Goldfinger, America's Sweethearts.
Come on. They're just trying to force me to pick James Bond. Fine, I'll do it.
This is like the week of I don't care.
Right?
Yeah. Atonement or Grindhouse?
Does Planet Terror drag Death Proof down enough that Atonement's better?
No.
No, because Death Proof is that good.
It really is. I used to only like the first half of it, but then realizing how much fun the second half is in terms of an action. I mean, I love the dialogue in Death Proof, and the second half is all about, you know, the car chase, and I don't know why I like the dialogue better, but it's just, I don't know. Batman Begins, Demetrius, that's not a movie. Batman Begins, 2001, A Space Odyssey.
2001.
Yeah. Three Amigos, A Knight's Tale.
Knight's Tale for me.
I'm with you. Rango, Silent Night, Deadly Night 5, The Toymaker.
It's Rango. I love Rango.
Yeah, I have no idea if I saw that, but clearly Rango is a better movie than that one. The Pink Panther, 1963, Dead Man Walking.
Dead Man Walking.
Sunset Boulevard, Volcano.
Sunset Boulevard. I really hate Volcano. Ever tell you my Volcano? I told the Volcano story, right?
Tell it again. I don't remember it.
It was about the sitting in the theater watching the trailer and thinking, this isn't a bad movie. This doesn't look that bad. This doesn't look bad. Then they come to the tagline, the coast is toast. And my sister and I just burst into laughter. That's the dumbest tagline ever. The coast is toast. Just because something rhymes doesn't make it good.
That's terrible. The Road Warrior, Dogs of Chinatown.
I've not seen Dogs of Chinatown.
The Road Warrior, Beer Fest.
Oh, good Lord, I don't care.
I'll go for The Road Warrior just because I feel like I'm supposed to. All right, that's too loud. The Incredibles, North by Northwest.
North by Northwest.
Agreed completely. The Fighter, that's the cover of The Purge.
That's a clever poster for The Purge. I never put that one out, I don't think. It's this very like 1930s, yeah. 1940s poster. Looks like a wartime poster from the early war period of the World War II. It's really cool.
It's a cool looking
describing poster. It for the podcast people.
Yeah. If you want to see it, make sure you watch our YouTube channel. So The Fighter or The Purge?
It's The Fighter, but that's a cool poster.
Avatar, Bad Santa.
Bad Santa. It's the one context I might pick Bad Santa in. Jesus, what the hell?
Girl Interrupted, Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
It's Girl Interrupted. I'm covering up my screen.
The Nut Job, Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah. Bad Times at the El Royale, The Third Man.
The Third Man.
Agreed. Rosemary's Baby, 100 Girls.
I don't know that I've seen 100 Girls. I don't know what that is.
I mean, you probably could have picked Rosemary's Baby anyway, but...
Yeah, probably.
Rosemary's Baby, Hook.
Yeah, it's a Rosemary Baby.
The Dark Knight Rises, End of Days.
Dark Knight Rises.
Agreed. The Revenant, Atonement.
Revenant.
Yep. Ice Age 2, The Meltdown, Walk the Line.
Walk the Line. Begrudgingly.
Inside Out, Frankenstein.
That's tough. That is hard. Man. Oh, wow. Because I love Frankenstein. But I think Inside Out's a better movie.
I think I'm going to go Frankenstein. I think, I don't know. I don't know why I'm trying to pick apart Inside Out all the goddamn time, but... I like it okay. But you win. Inside Out wins. U.S. Marshals, Monster.
Monster.
Agreed. The Haunting, Van Helsing.
The Haunting. Van Helsing's really terrible. It's bad enough that The Haunting is better.
Event Horizon, Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay.
Take the least of all the Harold and Kumar movies.
Flipping.